Thank you so much for joining me this morning, this evening, wherever you may be. Coast to Coast has always fascinated listeners worldwide because we explore the fringe realities of our world. Every day we're faced with the news, stories going on around the world, celebrity news. This is an opportunity to tackle different aspects of the world that we perceive or think we understand. Sometimes it's really easy to dismiss guests as being kooks or crazy or having an agenda. They just want to sell a book. But I find in most cases, the most exciting part of the adventure for me is peeling back these pages, going along on the journey to see what people have to say and what they have to share, and allowing you, the listeners, to discern for yourself what makes sense and what does not. I can tell you that in the years that I've been doing our show, Darkness Radio, for the last 10 and a half years, and the last 3.5, 4 years I've been co-hosting and filling in here for George Norrie, that the times I've thought the guest or the topic is the most out there, I get the most email back from people telling me, I'm so glad you tackled this topic because I've felt this my whole life, or I've always had that insight and I thought I was alone, I thought I was crazy. And you realize that there are people that are impacted, and sometimes the message isn't for you. Sometimes the message is for whoever else is listening and making that connection. And then on the other side, it's for entertainment value. There are listeners around the world that are just fascinated by the possibilities. The possibilities of what could exist beyond what we believe, what we've been taught. And we've already been proven. Science proves time and time again that the decisions and the things that we've learned in the past are always changing, always adapting. And we have to be open to those changes in order to make greater leaps in understanding. That's why I'm so proud to be a part of a show like this and so honored that George allows me to step in, because I love talking to these guests from all around the world as we explore these different facets of life or the possibilities of life here or in parallel universes and alternate dimensions. Tonight, our guest is Barry Strom, and we're talking about strange conspiracies. We'll take a look inside the killing of Lincoln and what happened to John Wilkes Booth. We'll talk about devil's vortexes, including the Bermuda Triangle, time travel of Bruce Gernon, the Buddy Holly conspiracy, Bobby Kennedy. We've already talked about Jack Kennedy, and we've got so much more to cover this evening. So sit back, turn down the lights, turn up the radio, open your mind, and absorb the possibilities. What if everything you hear tonight is the truth? What about it makes sense to you? What doesn't? And explore it for yourself. Get off your butt to open up the computer and start to research. See if some of these threads start to pull together and make sense for you. Whether it's this show or any show we do on Coast to Coast AM, the idea is to excite your mind and your passion and open you up to the elements of the world around us. So stay tuned. The journey continues. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Barry Strom, our guest this evening for the entire show. A little later on in the evening, we're going to talk about animal communication. But right now, spirits speak of conspiracies and mysteries. So, Barry, according to the message you got through from John Kennedy, it was not Lee Harvey Oswald that assassinated him. He did not do any of the shots, and that LBJ was behind the assassination, which is talked about. I mean, that's big speculation. Many people believe that. But did he give you a specific name of who pulled the trigger, or how many gunmen were definitely involved?
Well, there were supposedly 5 gunmen involved. They had a lot of backups in case the first guy missed.
Okay.
A fellow by the name of Frank Sturgis is who Kennedy told me fired the kill shot.
Sure.
He gave me another name of one of the conspirators. It was E. Howard Hunt. And you can actually go online, and Hunt is the individual that did a deathbed confession that he was involved. He was apparently one of the backups that didn't have to fire. But that's pretty much the guys that carried the load on it. Johnson made up his mind to have Kennedy assassinated when Kennedy told him he was not going to be on the ticket for second term. They didn't get along well. Johnson, as vice president, had come up through. He had a lot of mafia ties back in Texas, and it was actually a very, very opposite character type from Jack Kennedy. So they weren't getting along at all. Bobby Kennedy actually told the press that Johnson was fair game if the press wanted to go after him. And when Johnson was informed he wasn't going to be on the ticket, he realized that he had to do something or he was never going to get to be president of the United States. So he's the he is actually the person that pulled the trigger on the plan to go ahead. Apparently, he had some connections with the Chicago mob, and they were also involved with it. And I think Sturgis came through the, one of the mob connections. But Kennedy was very emphatic about what took place, how it happened. He said he had a hunch something was going to happen. I asked him why he rode in the open convertible in Dallas, and his answer was, "I was no coward." Very, very interesting man to talk to. Part of the reasons that he was going to be killed is his plan was to end the Vietnam War. He knew that we were going to be in a quagmire, and he was planning on getting out. And if we would have got out of the Vietnam, a lot of people would have stopped making money. So he had a lot going on, and there were quite a few reasons why he was assassinated.
Did you ask Kennedy about his connection to the untimely death of Marilyn Monroe?
Not with his connection to the death, but I did, in fact, ask him whether he slept with Marilyn Monroe, and he did readily admit it.
Right, but again, that information is out there. I'm just curious if he knew who killed Marilyn.
Actually, the part where we started to talk about Marilyn was at the end of the session. Mm-hmm. We were starting to get tired. I should have asked more questions, I know, but that one just got away from me. I did mean to pursue it, but I just didn't. I forgot to ask it.
Do you find that if you're talking to somebody, and like in Kennedy's case, you're talking to him about his assassination, his murder, his death, there's a lot of belief out there that Jack and Bobby were behind the death of Marilyn Monroe, that's a real possibility. Do you think he would be forthcoming in spirit to tell you that, or would he avoid, would the communication end? I'm just curious what your thoughts would be when they have to implicate themselves.
I think that he would avoid answering that, to be honest with you.
But why? If he's in an enlightened state, and he's on a level in you know, heaven, plane of existence, whatever it is, you'd think truth would kind of matter at this point in his evolution. Why not just answer the question truthfully?
It would probably depend on whether he's planning on reincarnating or not. Karma is very real, so if you're involved in some bad stuff, you can pay for it in the next life when you come back. And they have to, they're judged over there. And
right, but you would think that would help them with karma by answering these questions and putting out the truth. The good karma would be in relieving Marilyn of the belief that she committed suicide.
You're probably correct. As I was talking to him, his father, Joe Kennedy, was involved in a lot of really bad stuff, a lot of connections. I asked him whether he ever sees his father over there, and he said, "No, I never see him because he is in a lower level." So apparently his father was a lot worse than what did a lot of bad things in comparison with what Jack did. Because Jack was, he was readily available. So I when they judged him, I guess they didn't put him in heavenly jail or hell or whatever it is over there.
Do you ask these people what death is like?
Yes. Often it comes as a total surprise to them. When we talked to Davy Jones of the Monkees, he had an instant heart attack and passed, and his comment was he was utterly shocked to be on the other side looking back. People that, in the type of instances like Kennedy, where death comes very suddenly and as a surprise, that is actually a shock to them. And
right, but when, okay, Davey tells you, boy, it was a surprise. It just hit him.
Yeah.
He died. I think he had a heart attack in his car, passed away after riding and spending the day with his horses back in February 29th, I think 3 or 4 years ago.
Yes, correct.
So he passes away, but does he say what it's like to die? Do we know what it feels like in that final moment of life letting go, of us leaving the physical form? Do they say, is there a release? Is there, you know, a sucking noise? Is there something that they can relate to us about that actual moment in our history?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had a session where I've asked the questions about the moment of death, but I promise you I will do that and try to get some answers for it. That's a very interesting subject. It's just not something that I've ever investigated as yet.
Because I think that would fascinate people. You know, truthfully, I mean, it's amazing that we get to hear from their perspective, allegedly, what happened to them, why they died, where they went afterwards. But to me, the idea of, you know, is there a heaven? Is there a hell? Did you meet God? You know, Buddha, Ronald McDonald, who is it that's there to meet you at the pearly gates? You know, is it golden pearly gates, or are they big golden arches? What exactly are we going to find? See, that to me is kind of the real conspiracy. That's the real answer that I'm curious. And then talking to spirits of different beliefs and nationalities, you know, I mean, you're talking to a devout Catholic with Kennedy, and if you contact Gandhi, who had a different set of beliefs, does he see Kennedy? Are they in two different heavens or utopias or wherever they're at? You know, that kind of really intrigues me. Have you talked to them about the people from different belief systems, and if they do see each other, or you know, do we all live as one in that universe?
You all live in one in that universe. I can help you with a couple of those answers.
Please.
One night I was asking, what is heaven? Where is it? Is it in the sky? The guide comes back and says, heaven is all around you. It is the sky. So everybody essentially goes to this heaven that is all around you. Now, I know I'm going to get some crappy emails about this part of it.
Yeah, but you don't make the rules. You're just passing what you've been told.
This is exactly what we've been told. At the time of death, all pain goes away, and you feel this euphoria and happiness. And as you pass through, your family members will be there to help you out. You will see deceased loved ones. You will see friends that have passed in front of you. And the role of all these people is to make the passing easier on you. It can be highly traumatic for somebody that has died suddenly that doesn't expect it. Sometimes it takes many, many years for the soul to accept what has happened to him. There's sometimes they refuse to leave the earth plane. That's why a lot of the troubled ghosts that we have are still over here, because the trauma of it, they don't want to face that passing. But everybody that we speak to on the other side, they're happy. They are delighted with what's going on over there. Your soul has free will on the other side, just like it has it over here. If you're happy with the realm that your soul's advanced to, you don't have to come back again. You can stay there. Your soul actually makes the decision to reincarnate. If it doesn't want to attempt to advance, it can stay there. For instance, when we talked with General Grant, he's preparing to come back, but his wife, Julia, has made the decision she's not reincarnating anymore. She had enough of it over here. So each soul makes its own decision.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if souls fracture? You know, when we hear people saying that they were Marilyn Monroe in their last life, and they know some really spooky details about Marilyn's private life, and they've even convinced some of Marilyn's friends, you know, Sherry Lee Laird, who believes she is the reincarnation of Marilyn Monroe and has a very interesting story, and knew enough private information. She's talked to Marilyn's friends who were able to corroborate, and they believe she is Marilyn Monroe. But then there are others that have come forward that have just as compelling, different information. When somebody is as broken as Marilyn was at the time of her death, when she releases, could that soul fracture? Could it, in fact, inhabit many different bodies as time progresses?
Absolutely. Your soul can have split lives. I'm familiar with two past lives where mine was actually split and overlapped. So, yes, your soul can be in multiple bodies at the same time.
Okay, but can Marilyn's soul be two and three people in our lifetime right now because of what she was going through, do you believe?
Yes, Yeah, okay. It's absolutely possible.
Well, that would make some sense of, you know, of what people are experiencing, and how that, you know, that sincere feel that they were this person in their last lifetime. And I'm more fascinated by the people who had no interest in Marilyn Monroe, had no ties to Marilyn Monroe. They weren't big fans, but they just started having these memories and flashes and images. But do you get ideas too from these communications with the other side, Barry, that, you know, if the Akashic Records exist and we kind of pass through this ethereal plane after every soul is put through, is there a chance that maybe that soul, Dave Schrader's soul, happens to resonate at the same tonality as JFK's soul? So maybe I didn't really necessarily reincarnate from JFK, but my soul and his soul are kind of in that same tuned in dial on the radio, and I'm going to pick up, and it'll seem like they're my memories. It may seem like I was him, when all I'm really doing is tuning into his frequency.
Or you could be a member of his soul family. You have an extended family of souls on the other side that have been related to you in multiple lifetimes. And you know, let's say that you had a soul that was watching over you that you mm-hmm. never met. Well, that is absorbing those energies. And when that soul reincarnates, it will have memories from that prior. The concept of split lives is really kind of screwy to keep up with. It's very, I had a hard time with trying to accept the fact that yes, your life can be in multiples, but yes, it can. I can, in my personal prior lives, my last prior and second prior actually overlap for a couple years.
Well, you talk about reincarnation, and let's look at the similarities between the death of John F. Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln. And there are some really weird coincidences. And there's been some belief that he may have been reincarnated into John F. Kennedy and reliving that fate again. When you communicated with Kennedy or Lincoln, was that ever a question that you asked that, you know, did you come back? Were you this person? Or, you know, I guess the other big one is Charles Lindbergh connection to Abraham Lincoln.
I never did, but you're coming up with some damn good questions. I wish I'd have thought of them at the time.
You'll have to channel me next time and call my phone number. I'll give you a whole bunch of questions.
Give me a list of questions, and I'll get the answers for you.
That'd be fascinating to find out, right? Because if you're, you know, you hear these commonalities between some of these people, and you often wonder, you know, could there be a connection spiritually and karmically to how their lives continue to play out in similar aspects? So.
Yeah, absolutely. Many souls are intertwined through all these mm-hmm. different lifetimes, and it's actually pretty cool when you start tracking it back. There's some amazing things that exist in your priors.
All right, well, we'll talk more about that. Now, let's talk about Lincoln and what happened to John Wilkes Booth when we return. If you're interested in soulmates and soul connections, George Norrie's thought of it for you, and he's put together a great way for you to meet others just like you. You now can go to paranormaldate.com, approaching 52,000 members, and it's free to join. Free to join. You can go in there, check it out, be a part of the community, get a feel for it, and if you decide you'd like to stay and get a full membership, use promo code George if you stick around. That's promo code George, and you'll be able to get a special discount for a full membership. And possibly meet your soulmate, meet the person you're supposed to be connected to in this lifetime or from the past lifetime. You never know how that's going to turn out for you. ConspiracyDate.com as well. So if you're fascinated by topics just like this, there are others just like you. You can find them now easier than ever. ConspiracyDate.com and ParanormalDate.com. Stay tuned. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Today is World Suicide Prevention Day. And from your friends at Coast to Coast AM and my show Darkness Radio, we want you to know you're not alone. We know that there can be dark days in everybody's lives, some days where you feel alone and bleak and there's just no hope in sight. These are temporary moments, and I promise you that. Fascinating new book coming out by Bruce Springsteen, his biography called Born to Run, where he talks about his struggle for the last 30 years with depression, a crippling disease. And I'll tell you, you know, when I was a teenage boy, I had a horrible, horrible week, something earth-crushing to me at that time. And that week ended, and culminated with me putting a gun inside my mouth and pulling the trigger. It misfired and didn't go off. Not once, not twice, but three times. It was fully loaded, ready, didn't go off. I put the gun away, went downstairs, turned on some music, and in the lyrics of Bruce Springsteen's pop single, Dancing in the Dark, I heard a message come through. I heard a man who struggled with his image, with the way he felt about himself in his own life. And all of a sudden, that lonely edge I felt, that isolation, that I'm the only person that felt like this, and this condescending feeling I'd had towards myself started to lift, and I realized other people feel like this. Other people feel like this, and they pull through, and they survive. And I did. And I never put that gun back in my mouth. I didn't have the number to call back then. I didn't have somebody to call out to. So I'll always thank the boss for saving my soul through his rock and roll. Meant something to me. But again, I realized somebody made something of his life that felt exactly like I did. And we can't always shake off the doldrums and the blues and the depression. We can't. It just doesn't shake off. You can't brush it off and stand up. Sometimes it's a deep, dark spot that you're in. And you can't turn to your friends or family because they don't know what to say. We're not trained for this in our lives. But there is a place that you can go. And it's free. And it's confidential. And you can talk to them 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you want to hurt yourself or hurt someone else, there is a number. Please make that call. 1-800-273-8255. 1-800-273-8255. Or you can go to Lifeline Crisis Chat. There are ways you can get help and talk to people that can help bring you through that dark zone. They can bring you through and be a resource to help you. So please, don't take a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And it is temporary. You don't understand how many lives you touch on a daily basis, even when you think you don't. That smile you gave to a cashier, that happy birthday you posted on somebody's Facebook page might have meant the difference in their life between making that decision today or not. So please don't discount your life. Your friends at Darkness Radio and Coast to Coast AM love you and want you around for a good long time. Make that call, 1-800-273-8255. I'll be hosting again tomorrow on Coast to Coast AM. My guest in the first hour is author Brad Meltzer from Lost History TV, and we're going to talk about the unveiling of the flag at the 9/11 Memorial and Museum in New York City, where it will be on display for the world to see. We'll also discuss his new History Channel special, America's 9/11 Flag, Rise from the Ashes. We'll spend a little bit of the first hour doing that and taking your calls, your memories and thoughts of 9/11 on this, the 15th anniversary of that tragedy. A little later on in the show, Mark Anthony, one of our favorite guests, will join me. His book, Evidence of Eternity, begins on 9/11. And we're going to talk to him about 9/11. We're going to talk to him about psychic scars that are left on the planet when something that traumatic happens. And we'll open up phone lines. You can call in and talk, and we can work through the grief of this together as a people and a friend, and people that have the same thoughts and beliefs and ideas coming together. We'll open up phone lines and discuss that on tomorrow night's show in remembrance of the many people that lost their lives that day in a tragedy that hopefully we'll never again see in the next 20 lifetimes here in the United States or anywhere around the world. When we come back, we'll continue our journey with Barry Strom this evening, and we will find out about the killing of Abraham Lincoln and what happened to John Wilkes Booth according to the messages he received, and we'll do that next on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back to the show. If you have questions for our guests throughout the evening, if you want to email me, you can always do that, dave@darknessradio.com. dave@darknessradio.com. I'll try to squeeze your questions in as the show progresses. And if you want to follow me, you can follow me at Facebook. I'm at facebook.com/darknessradiodave, or you can follow me on Twitter @darknessradio. So go check that out and become a part of our world. We're back. Barry Strom, our guest this evening. All right, let's talk about the killing of Abraham Lincoln and what happened to John Wilkes Booth, according to the information that the spirits discerned to you.
I think this is one of the most interesting of the conspiracies that we've ever dealt with. I got into the whole Lincoln thing, because I wanted to know who was behind it. I just had that feeling that John Wilkes Booth wasn't the one that did all the planning and allowed for his escape and everything that happened with it. As history states, John Wilkes Booth kills Abraham Lincoln. He escapes over the only bridge available that doesn't have military guards, goes down into southern Virginia, keeps on the loose for about 2 weeks. He is supposedly trapped in a barn down in southern Virginia. A cavalry sergeant who's under orders not to kill him shoots Booth, and pretty much the whole thing is over with at that point. The rest of the conspirators are hung. Four of them are hung. Several of them are put away in jail. And that's what history tells you. So, now, in this conspiracy, I did not actually talk to Booth himself. He's apparently back right now. But I did talk to the guides that knew what happened with the conspiracy. So I started by asking the guides, I said, did Booth, first of all, I started by asking who was behind it. They said Secretary of War Stanton hired Booth to do it, and he was assisted in the conspiracy by the then Vice President Andrew Johnson. So you had, once again, you have a Vice President Johnson that wants to become president, and Stanton was never a big fan of Lincoln. So this all made a lot of sense. So I asked the question, did Booth die in Virginia? And it comes back, no, he does not. So I said, well, what name did he, you know, if he wasn't killed, what name did he go under in his life after he escaped from Virginia? And the board spells out John St. Helens. And we did this session over a couple nights. So I went back and I started to do a little bit of research. And online, there is a theory that John St. Helens was actually Booth after he was supposedly killed. So I get on the board once more, and I start to ask, now I'm a little bit more intelligent with what they say happened. So as it turns out, John Wilkes Booth escapes, and he goes to Kentucky. 3 years later, he marries a woman in Kentucky, and there is actually a record of a marriage license to this woman that is signed J.W. Booth. The woman had a teenage son, and somehow he overhears a conversation with the woman that is Booth. Booth finds out and abandons them and heads for Texas. He buys a bar in a little town on the frontier and does business there for a couple of years as a bartender and owns the bar, etc. A woman in the town is going to marry a U.S. Marshal. Booth finds out that a marshal is coming to town and fears that this marshal will recognize him. So he heads further out on the Texas frontier, does odd jobs. All this is under the name of John St. Helens. Booth St. Helens gets very, very ill and thinks he's going to die. So he does a deathbed confession. Well, unfortunately for Booth, the guy recovers after he's confessed to this thing. So he once again goes on the lam and heads for the frontier in Oklahoma. Winds up in a little town of Enid. Now, I'm not sure of all the details here, but somehow or other, when he does this confession, an attorney in Kentucky hears of this confession. In 1903, Booth has become a house painter and an alcoholic. And in 1903, he commits suicide in Enid, Oklahoma. Somehow or other, this attorney in Kentucky learns of Booth's death and purchases the body from the undertaker and actually has the body of John Wilkes Booth mummified. And they start to show Booth's body at fairs. And the body, mummified body of John Wilkes Booth was actually on display at the 1904 World's Fair. The body is, in 1930, some forensic experts examined the body, and there were like 27 points of injury that corresponded. The mummified body had the broken leg, where Booth, when he jumped off the balcony, he caught into the banner and broke his leg when he hit the floor. That injury was still on the body, and the forensic experts at the time in the 1930s came to the conclusion it probably was Booth's body. We didn't have DNA at the time, so there wasn't any final testing done. And the body is shown at carnivals around the country. And the last time the mummified body of John Wilkes Booth was known to have been on display was in the state of Pennsylvania in the 1970s. And in my book, I actually have a picture of the body of John Wilkes Booth that was taken in 1903 in Oklahoma that I got from the U.S. Archives. And when you look at the face and everything, it is almost, you can really see that it's an older version of John Wilkes Booth. So once again, history kind of let us down, but that story was given to me by the spirit guides.
What a strange tale. Very weird. But let's,
it's weird, but it's just, you know, you can go in and prove it. It's
right.
A great story.
Right. Let's dip into, you mentioned earlier Buddy Holly, you channeled through him, and it was still a very tender kind of communication. He was still upset about what had happened. Did you, again, was this one of the spirits you called out for, or did he come to you?
I was, at the time, I was working with a very, very gifted psychic, and Holly actually appeared to this woman and wanted to do an interview. So she called me and asked me to bring the board over, and we sat down and asked for his presence. And we, during the interview, we actually got Peggy Sue Guerin on the Skype line. That's the one Buddy Holly song Peggy Sue was written about.
Okay.
So we actually had Peggy Sue present on Skype with us, and she was asking all these very detailed questions of Buddy Holly, and there was absolutely no doubt that we had his spirit with us, because he knew the names, he was pulling stuff out, the whole thing. He apparently secretly loved Peggy Sue, but had married another woman, and it was a pretty cool story to sit there and listen to these two, and all we did was spell out the messages, and those were the two people that actually had the conversation. But at the time, in 1959, when Buddy Holly was, you know, coming into his own with rock and roll, everybody was they felt the rock and roll of the time with Elvis and all the body motions and everything was not the way the country should be going. So there was a lot of resentment for it. But the mob was smart enough to know that there was also a lot of money to be made out of rock and roll. And apparently they approached Holly that they wanted a piece of the action from what he was doing, and he turned them down. So on the day he died in February, they did something to his airplane. And the airplane comes down. It's Buddy Holly's killed, Richie Valens, J.P. Richardson, who was the big bopper. And that was the song, The Day the Music Died, was written over the day that these three rock and roll stars were killed in this airplane accident. But he was extremely upset because no one had ever really investigated it. Everybody just wrote it off because there was a light snow falling, that it was the weather that caused this thing. But no, he was very emotionally upset. You could tell from his wording and everything that he was still he is not at peace over on the other side yet. Yeah, he's still looking to try to find justice, but there's no way it's going to ever happen now. Everybody's passed. There's no way it can be investigated. And he wanted to tell his story. We listened to him, and I wound up not putting the story in the book because he specifically, Peggy Sue is writing a book about it, and he wanted her to write the story. So I did not put this story in the book, but it is very interesting, and we have all the notes and everything from the session of it. But Buddy Holly is one troubled soul over on the other side.
Oh, what a shame. What about talking about troubled souls? Is this something that would be taboo for you, or have you ever thought of reaching out to contact Adolf Hitler?
Never ask for evil, plus the fact that we have been told that he is in a very dark place, and he has got to make up to all the souls that he has harmed, which will be millenniums and millenniums, and he cannot be contacted.
See, what I think is fascinating about a story like Adolf Hitler, if we are to believe that we buy into the whole idea of reincarnation and we choose our soul life and our path, and we choose to come back as somebody who gets cancer, we choose to come back as somebody who is abused, that means that according to the theories that everybody puts out there, that we people would have chose to be persecuted by that regime and know what it was like to be persecuted and tortured or killed. So didn't he play a role he had to play, because that was his choice, his karma, to come back and play that role so that those other people could experience their existence? And does that make sense? Do you know where I'm going with that?
No, I know where you're headed. But that's
and trust me, it's not sympathy for the devil here. I have no sympathy for a man like that, but I'm just curious if, you know, that was the role he was issued. You know, you would think that there would still be some kind of communication, because that would be, without him, there wouldn't have been that place for all the other souls that made that choice to come back to lead that existence.
Well, we did some fairly extensive questioning over this, because Hitler, I was intrigued by a lot of the same things you're speaking. Hitler was actually a very high-ranking guide that was sent back with the purpose of leading Germany out of the problems they had. Unfortunately, you have free will and you have ego. And in Hitler's case, he screwed probably 1,000 lifetimes up by letting his ego and free will get in front of what his true mission on life really was. I don't know if that makes sense, but he was...
Right, so he came with a job, and he took it a different way, is what you're saying.
He took it an absolute different way. I asked the guys one night, I said, I mean, was his life plan laid out like that? And they said, no, evil is never created on this side. So when you bring your life plan, it doesn't have all this stuff in. Once you get over, and if you notice, the board prayer was protect
but that doesn't
ego.
Play right, but that doesn't play into effect with if we chose to come here to learn what it was like to be persecuted and go through a life like that. Evil has to exist, because and it has to play its role, because without it we can't have the existence that we're choosing to come back for.
That is correct.
So that flies kind of in the face and contradictory to the message that they're giving you, that evil takes place here. Well, it has to, because it has to be the yin to the yang, the light to the dark, the opposite to what, so people can have those life experiences and learn the lessons that they wanted to in this lifetime. That's why I think a lot of people have trouble with the belief of reincarnation, is that people would specifically choose to come back to learn these lessons, because who would think that you'd want to choose to come back and be a sexually molested person or abused or murdered or persecuted? It just doesn't fly in the face of logic, or it does fly in the face of logic. We're up against another break. We'll continue our journey. Barry Strom, our guest for the remainder of the show. A little later, we'll talk about animal communication. We'll continue with conspiracies when we return. I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.